Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Welcome back to Shit Show Saturday.
Welcome, Terry. Shit Show Terry, by way of France.
Thank you, Andrea. Thank
you. Where are you in France exactly again?
Middle of fucking nowhere.
I want to look it up on a map. Where is it? What's it called?
The region is called La Corrèze. It's like kind of in the center of the country. Like, it's 5 hours to Paris, 2 hours to Bordeaux, 2 hours to Toulouse. Yeah, it's really rural. They call it the diagonal of France, where basically there's nothing.
All right. What song do you want played when you walk into your room?
Okay. Music was my kind of escapism when I was a kid, and I got into really weird music. So this is niche as fuck. It's Untitled, track 23 from the album Bokumo Wakaran by Bogdan Raczynski. I'll send you a link. I'll send you the MP3. 15,000 ways to be a tough guy.
What to expect?
Noisy, silly electronic music. Yeah.
Okay. Are there any words?
There's a little vocal sample at the beginning of this track, which, yeah, play it from the beginning and just let it roll out a little bit until you need to fade out. Yeah.
Okay. I'm excited to hear
it. I like the words. Yeah.
Are there horns?
No. No, it's just purely electronic. Yeah.
I'm excited to hear it. Carb.
Bread. Particularly, I like Asian breads, like South Asian breads. There's one
like
called
roti.
There's one called a paratha, which is like lots of thin layers with butter in between, and then it's fried, and it's just really good. You can eat it any time of the day. You can dip it in milky tea, or you can have it with curries. Yeah, you can just have it by itself. You can have it with honey dripped on it. It's just so good.
Is it like soft?
Crispy on the outside, soft on the inside.
Doughy in the inside?
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah.
You know, that was one of Sandra's, when I asked, I don't know if you've ever listened to her Shit Show Saturday, but she said how she liked her fries. She said, crispy on the outside, mashed potato on the inside.
I remember that one. Yeah. Kind of, I mean, it's a, like a fried flatbread. So it's not, it like doesn't expand out like other breads do. But yeah, you can find variations of it all around the world because, you know, Indian people have traveled around the world and settled. So you can find versions of it in the Caribbean and in the South Pacific. Yeah.
Okay. And cheese?
Considering I live in France, I'm not a massive cheese fan. Which is weird. I've been thinking about this. I'd probably say a good buffalo mozzarella, like a real Italian authentic buffalo mozzarella on a real good Neapolitan pizza. Yeah.
That sounds delicious. Okay. And Mr. Condiment Hater?
I don't hate condiments. Who said I hated condiments?
Oh, I thought when you were saying you had to think of one, you didn't like any.
Not because I hate.
Oh, sorry. It's Josh. Josh is the condiment hater. He was talking shit about ketchup the other day. You almost got kicked out.
I would say I prefer kind of sauces from Asia rather than kind of your traditional kind of American Western sauces. So like Thai spicy peanut butter dipping sauce would be up there.
Okay. Well, how did you find out that you were an adult child?
From you. Like, my recovery journey has been long and slow and like peeling apart layers like an onion. The whole ACA, Al-Anon, ACOA thing only came to me like in the last 6 months, maybe. Before that, I'd done one-to-one psychotherapies. I did not discover that I had CPTSD until I was like 37.
So how many years ago was that?
I'm 43 on Tuesday. So that's like, what, 5 years ago?
What was that discovery? How did you find out?
Marriage counseling. My marriage was coming to an end and I knew it. And I badgered my husband for about a year until he finally agreed to go to couples therapy. And while we were there, I'm really appreciative of this therapist because she must have twigged from what I was saying that there was something really deep going on inside of me. And she recommended Bessel van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score. And I read it and I was like, fuck, that's me. Jesus Christ, this is what I've been dealing with. This is what I've been trying to find out about myself for about 20 years. The first time I went to see any sort of therapist, it was like a counselor, not like a trained psychotherapist. I was in my early 20s. And then...
What was that for? Depression?
Yeah, I guess. I quit university and I ended up having to move back in with my parents. And obviously that brought out my...
rage?
My rage. Yeah. I had this kind of breakdown and I ended up throwing my phone across the kitchen and my mother took me to, what do you call it in America? The emergency ward.
The psych ward?
Yeah. Not psych ward, but just like the emergency room, which is weird because I didn't have a life-threatening emergency. I just kind of lost my shit.
Broke your phone.
They offered me antidepressants. I declined them. And then I went back home and then that was it. I think I found a therapist self-directed. Because I was under 23, I found this service where it was free, just like a counseling service. And I did not have any clue quite how fucked up my family was and how fucked up my childhood was at that point in my life. Uh-huh. So I saw her for maybe 3 months and thought, hey, I'm fine. Let's get on with life. Life did not go well. I met a guy, I married him, lived with him, and then... he was a very avoidant person, and that triggered all of my abandonment wounds. And so I started getting crazy in the relationship. I phoned up the British National Health Service mental health hotline. They put me on a waiting list to get some cognitive behavioral therapy. So I waited 9 months for that. And then I had 3 sessions with this woman, and she was like, this is not what you need. You need one-to-one psychotherapy. So then I started investigating therapists. I had a weird childhood where I moved around every couple of years to a different country. And I thought that was having a much bigger impact on my mental health than my family was. Or I thought they were both two things that were kind of separate, but both having an impact on my mental health. So I found this therapist who was an in-training psychotherapist, but she was also like a doctorate in sociology with a speciality in what's called third culture kids, which is people like me who spent their childhood living
everywhere.
Exactly, moving around everywhere and having very little connection to their home countries. She was really good. She was the one who said, these are not two separate things that you're dealing with, your family and the moving around. They all make up who you are. She was fantastic. She introduced me to a lot of themes. I didn't find out I was a third culture kid until I was in my like late 20s.
That I've never heard that term.
An aha moment. So she was great. I worked with her for like a few months and then took a break and then worked with her a little bit more.
Was it helpful?
Yeah, it was really helpful. She was the first person who introduced me to inner child work. But oh, wow. She was upfront in the fact that she was still in training and that she was still learning it herself. But at least she introduced me to the concept and we tried to have a kind of few sessions where it wasn't going as far as like IFS therapy. But it was definitely recognizing that there was a child, a wounded child inside of me who needed to be recognized. Then I stopped working with her to take some time out to kind of digest everything that I'd been through there. Then I went into that couples therapy. It was her who introduced me to CPTSD. In that therapy, I realized that there was no future for me and my husband. We separated. COVID came. Just before COVID, I'd met a guy in France. And he invited me to go live with him in France. So that's what I did. I packed up everything in the UK and I moved to France. I've been here since. So that's like 4.5 years. I found a psychotherapist to work with over Zoom for about a year, which ended like 9 months ago. And I went into this therapy starting off talking about my father, because it was my father who was the alcoholic and my father who abused me quite a lot emotionally, psychologically, and physically. And my therapist was like, yeah, that's fine, but how about your relationship with your mother? And I'd spent such a long time viewing my mother as a victim of my father's abuse without really truly recognizing the extent of her role that she played in my neglect and my abandonment and my abuse. Yeah. So it's like that. I was like 42 years old, 41 years old, and I'm still kind of unraveling the roles that everyone played. It's only like in the last 6 months that I've realized that I'm the scapegoat child. Uh-huh. And that opened up a whole Pandora's box of understanding my family dynamic.
A couple things. I don't know what it's called, but like the European equivalent of like what we have here of like the DSM, which has like all the mental disorders. It's like the IO. I don't know what it is, but they have CPTSD in there, but ours doesn't, which I think is interesting. But
look into that, because I think the UK uses the same DSM, the DSM-5. Okay. They have PTSD, but not CPTSD, or they see CPTSD as like a subsection of PTSD, but you can't actually get a diagnosis
for it. Oh, interesting. So I'm curious, though, if you could tell me about what was coming up in your couples counseling that led to the therapist suggesting that you read The Body Keeps the Score.
Some days I could not look her in the eyes. I would be wearing a hoodie like this. Mm-hmm. I'd be slumped in the chair. I would be basically unable to speak. I knew that I had problems with my parents at that point already. I also recognized in that therapy that my husband was treating me the way that my parents treated me, and that he was scapegoating me. So my ex-husband was a mental health nurse, and I recognized in the first few sessions that we had with this therapist that he was trying to position himself as like co-therapist to treat me. That's what eventually led me to know that the relationship was over and this guy was not on my side. I knew my father was an alcoholic from quite a young age, like 11, 12, 13, because my mother told me so.
Like me.
Let's talk about my parents a little bit. So my father is Australian. He's from like a middle-class family in Sydney. My mother is English, and she's from like a working-class family in the north of England, like industrial revolution kind of area. My mother, I know that when she was in her like mid-20s, she got on a ship and spent 6 weeks and sailed to Australia and started working there. And that's where my parents met. And then they had a relationship. They moved over to the UK together and got married. My father has one sister who also married an English person, and she also moved to England to the other side of the world. I know that both my father and his sister are running away from whatever trauma they experienced with their parents. I only vaguely knew.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you ever met them.
I met them a few times. Like when I lived in Asia, we would spend Christmases sometimes in Australia. So I would spend a week or two with them living at their house. That grandfather, he was deaf, pretty profoundly deaf. And so I wasn't able to create much of a relationship with him. He was unable to kind of communicate with other people. I understand that he went deaf when my dad was a child and that the family never learned sign language.
Wow. And so you know how he went deaf?
I have no idea. I think it was a gradual thing, but they kind of became quite isolated. And I don't think that my grandfather was able to have much of a good relationship with his kids because of that communication difficulty. I know that there's issues in that family, but I don't know what they are. I've recently reconnected with my dad's sister's eldest daughter because she's on a bit of a healing journey herself. And we've been able to kind of share a few stories. But she's like a stranger to me. I didn't know her growing up. So I grew up in Asia. So did my cousins. They grew up in
Hong Kong. Asia.
I spent a year in Burma and 2 years in Pakistan. Before that, I was in Texas for 3.5 years. Before that, I was in the Netherlands for 3.5 years. Let's backtrack to my story. I was born just outside of London, but when I was 18 months old, my family moved to the Netherlands. And then we spent 10 years traveling around.
During your dad's work, or just because they were trying to run, or what was the deal?
I think, yeah, they were trying to run, but my dad worked in the oil industry and he decided to take, you know, placements around the world. Uh-huh. He's probably running away from his own trauma and not knowing how. During those 10, 11 years that we lived like abroad, we never returned to the UK. So I grew up not having any knowledge, connection, or relationship to the UK. I don't know my mother's family. Both of her parents, I'm told, died before I was born. I'm starting to wonder whether that's actually true or not. I don't know my mother's family at all. When I've lived in the UK, it's not been in the same region of the UK, and I've met them literally a handful of times in my lifetime. My mother has one brother and one sister, but I don't know of my aunts and uncles, which are the blood relatives and which are not. Like, they're a mystery to me. So I have no connection to my mother's family, no connection to my father's family. I grew up having no connection to either of their countries, really, which is a big part of my trauma in that I have no identity. My parents didn't tell me stories about their lives in their home countries. We didn't visit them. I didn't see pictures of them. I didn't have relationships with their relations, with their families at all. So it was kind of just me and my crazy fucking family as we moved around the world. Because we moved every 2 years, I never had an opportunity to develop any safe relationships with adults or safe relationships with anyone that kind of was stable. Cats were my only stable relationships during my life. When we lived in Texas, we had loads of cats, and my sisters convinced my parents to move them around with us. That's why I'm obsessed with cats today. There's something wrong with my father. I've never seen a genuine emotion from him, except for maybe when he's enjoying tormenting people. He was very authoritarian. He was very loud. He projected one image of himself to the outside world, which was kind of Australian, rugby playing, beer drinking, life of the party kind of role. But at home, he was kind of just completely emotionally withdrawn. I've never had a conversation with him at all. Never had a conversation with him. Yeah, and he was pretty violent. He was a very high-functioning alcoholic. So he worked for the same company for like 40, 50 years or something like that. He always held down a job. He had obviously quite a well-paid job. I guess we were a middle-class family, but I guess he accrued a lot of wealth because when we lived in Asia, we had a house provided for us. We had a car provided for us. Our schooling was paid for by my dad's company. We got a holiday allowance and stuff like that. So he was able to kind of just pocket all of the money that he earned without having to spend it. And my mother, I felt sorry for her for a lot of my life, especially during my teenage years. I saw her as the victim of my father's abusive behavior and his alcoholism. She would parentify me. She'd use me as like a stand-in spouse or best friend or therapist, hysterically screaming and wailing about how mistreated she was. She would.
Did they fight a lot?
Sorry?
Did they fight a lot?
Oh, God, yeah.
And what did they fight about? Just anything?
I have no idea. I wasn't interested. I shut myself in my bedroom. Uh-huh. My sister, this is another story. I've got three sisters. They're all older than me, but two of them are basically strangers to me. So we lived together in England when I was born for 18 months. I don't remember that.
Are they much older?
There's 7 years between all of us. So there's about 2 years between each of us. So they remember me as a baby, but I don't remember them. Mm-hmm. When we lived in the Netherlands, one of them was at boarding school in England. Then we all lived together for 3.5 years when we lived in America. But then when we moved to Asia, the two eldest ones were sent to live in Sydney, Australia at boarding schools. So they were like 12 and 14 at the time or something. Since then, that was 1989. The eldest one has been there ever since. And so she kind of, she's not a sister to me anymore. I don't know her. She doesn't know me. We would see each other maybe once every 5 years or something like that. The other one lived in Australia until she was like 30 and then moved over to the UK. So I'd see her a little bit more regularly, but we'd spent so much of our childhood and early adulthood apart that we didn't know each other. The other sister moved around with me. And she, I believe, was groomed by my parents to be kind of my main bully. Mm-hmm. So I was scapegoated by my family, my parents, but they taught her to do most of the actual bullying, the verbal abuse, the humiliation, the shaming, the judging, the criticizing and stuff like that. So she was a hellish person to live with. And mm-hmm. I'm sure they've turned her into a narcissist now. Like, yeah. I cut ties with my parents about 10 years ago.
Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Was there like a final straw?
Yeah. So like when I left home at 18 to go to university, my parents never got in touch with me, but I would kind of go home for Christmases or like to family events out of, I guess, a sense of obligation. But they were always crappy memories, crappy times, because my parents, my whole family was constantly just looking to start fights with everyone else. Mm-hmm. Like there was always, you were just waiting for something to blow up. Mm-hmm. The last time I spent Christmas with them, I guess I was in my early 30s. And during a few days, there was just a constant low level. Then it all blew up because my sister provoked me. My sister and I had a kind of shouting match, not a huge one, but a shouting match. My mother was in the kitchen and I'd started healing by this point. And so I was starting to learn tools such as saying sorry for things. And I went into the kitchen and I had a conversation with my mom where I said, like, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean for this to blow up. I'm sorry for the way I've acted. It wasn't fair. And I've kind of created a tension. And then I went back to sit with my husband. And then like not 2 minutes later, she came marching into the living room in a giant rage of self-pity. And she said the words, "No one ever fucking apologizes to me." And I was literally just in the fucking kitchen apologizing to this woman. And that kind of told me no one in this family is ever going to heal. No one in this family has any interest in seeking conflict resolution. Everyone in this family is just constantly looking to start fights with people. The way that my parents taught us to have, quote, self-esteem was to put other people down so that you feel better about yourself. And I realized that that's not self-esteem. That's an illusion of power. And it's taken me a long time to unlearn that in my life. I've spent a lot of my life being quite judgmental and critical of people, and I'm learning to let that go.
Yeah. It's an illusion of power that's covering up shame, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Everyone in my family hates themselves. They absolutely hate themselves.
Did you announce that you were going no contact with them? Like, did
yes.
you?
Uh-huh. I'm really proud of how I did it. I wrote an email to all of them because they're all in different parts of the country.
And where are your parents now?
They live in the house that they bought when we moved back to the UK after living in Pakistan. That's another story. When we moved back to the UK after traveling around the world, my dad worked just outside of London, so he would commute to work. Most nights he didn't come home until the early hours of the morning. We had no idea where he was. We didn't know if he was working or if he was seeing prostitutes or if he was going to bars and drinking. We have no idea. I remember waking up, hearing my mother throwing chairs across the kitchen, screaming, "Where the fuck is he? Where the fuck is he?" Me opening the bedroom door, shouting back down to her, "Shut the fuck up. I'm trying to sleep. I've got school tomorrow." I got quite intolerant of my mother's hysteric behavior after a while. After a few years, his job was transferred to Scotland. So he would fly up to Scotland Sunday night, come back Friday night. We have no idea what he was doing in Scotland, but one Christmas I went home. I remember my mother caught my father speaking on the phone to another woman in their bedroom on Christmas Day. He obviously has a mistress or another family or something up there in Scotland. I have no fucking idea. They're 80 now. He retired at like 65, but couldn't stop working. So he started working as a consultant.
Same thing my dad did.
Surprise, surprise.
Yep. Yep, no.
So yeah, they're just fucked. I have no trust in either of them.
How did you tell them?
Yes. Okay. So I wrote an email, but I spent like 6 weeks constructing this email. I wanted it to be right. And last year I went back and I found that email, and I still actually agree with everything in that email, even though I don't have the vocabulary I have today. But I was like, I'm sick of being the scapegoat. My father and my sister are bullies, and I want nothing to do with them, and I never want to see them again. I might see individual family members in a neutral place at a prearranged date. And then I sent that email off, and I got absolutely no fucking response. Everyone ignored it. Since that time, I've had occasional notes from my mother. I've had them turning up at my house unexpectedly, to which I just shut all the curtains, lock the door. I have no interest in talking to you.
Have you read any of them?
Yeah. Yeah. My mother's notes kind of range between saying, "If you want counseling, I'll pay for it. I'll send you a check," to "You're being a horrible child. Problems you have with your father are between you and your father, but don't
take that out on your
sisters and me like this." She takes absolutely no fucking responsibility for anything that she did. I haven't even fucking told you about the stories that they like to tell as a bonding experience. So because my family grew up all in different countries, to get all six of us together was a very, very rare thing to happen. And what they did as a bonding experience was to retell these tales that paint me as the butt of a joke, But in fact, what they're actually doing is exposing their neglect. Mm. One story they tell is about how when I was a newborn baby, literally weeks old, they were looking for a place to a new house to buy in the outskirts of London. They went to visit this one house and the owners had like a cot room with a cot in a small bedroom. They put me in that cot in that bedroom while they had a tour of the house. And then they left the house and they forgot me. And they didn't realize that they didn't have their newborn child for like 20, 50, 20, 25 minutes or something and had to go back and get me. And that's hilarious. Isn't that just a hilarious story? There's another story about how I was upstairs in a bedroom by myself crying as a newborn baby. My sister, who was like 2 years older than me, so like a toddler, she picked me up by the head and dragged me down the stairs to make my parents aware that I was crying. Hilarious story. I'm the butt of the joke. Isn't that fucking hilarious? This is a story that they tell, but I don't think they tell it as a butt of a joke, but I don't know why they tell it in that case. When I was like 3 or 4 years old, when I was a toddler, the family went on holiday to a Mediterranean island. They spent the first day on the beach and they didn't put any sun protection on me. Like I was a bright red haired, pale skinned baby. I developed like fist sized blisters on my back. They took me to a hospital. And they left me basically there in the hospital for a week by myself while they went off and enjoyed their holiday. And like one parent might come and see me for visiting hours in the evening.
Talk about attachment trauma.
I mean, that's the sort of shit where police get involved. Like social services should get involved. That is physical abuse and neglect of a child on a huge scale. And these stories are just fucking told to me. I think there's huge gaps in my memory of my childhood because when we were living in Texas, my father moved to Burma a year before we did. And I didn't know this until I was in my late 20s when my mother happened to mention it in a story. So I was 7 or 8 years old. I have no recollection that my father did not live with us for a year. We had no contact with him by telephone or anything. I remember no reunion with him, like absolutely nothing. Another point about the moving around is that my parents paid absolutely no attention to the impact that it would have on me as a child. Having to adjust to living in a new country, an entirely different country, entirely different culture, having to restart school, having to make friends. Like when I lived in Asia, I went to American international schools, and I'd say about like 30% of the students were American and 70% were from everywhere else, like India, Malaysia, Singapore, Korea, Kenya, like all over the fucking world. So I learned how to adapt to making friends from cultures that were completely different to my own, which is a skill that I have now that I fucking love. But like while during summer holidays, for example, my friends would go back to their home countries for like 2 or 3 months for summer holidays. They would reconnect with their families, make roots in their home countries. We didn't do that. We just stayed. So my parents had no thought to how that would impact me and having no connection to my passport countries. I have a British accent now. I didn't always. I had an American accent when I was a kid. From like living in Texas and then living in Asia afterwards.
Do you know if your sisters have much of a relationship with your parents?
I don't really know.
Have they ever tried to contact you, any of them?
After I sent the letter, the email.
Was it addressed to everybody?
It was addressed to everyone. Yeah. After I sent that, like that wasn't a complete, I'm cutting everyone off, leave me the fuck alone. It was, I'm setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. I did agree to meet the two elder sisters because the eldest one had visited the UK. So those two came to visit me, one of them with their new daughter, my niece. And it was a really awkward situation. They stayed for a couple of hours. I was very guarded. I didn't want to give anything away. They kind of communicated on pleasantries and surface level bullshit. Like they're not ready to talk about the family at all. Since reconnecting with my cousin, my dad's sister's eldest daughter, she lives in Australia. We chat on Zoom. She has told me that she's tried to communicate with my sisters about all the dysfunction in the family, and they're just not ready to. And she told me that she's been waiting years and years and years for me to get to a point where I'm ready to talk, because she could realize we're both kind of creative people. We're both kind of emotionally attuned people. And she could see that in me from quite a young age. And she's just been waiting for me to get to the point where I'm able to have conversations with her. She sent me a message saying, you do have family who love you. And that fucking broke me.
Jesus. When was that?
Oh, that was like just a few weeks ago.
Have you been communicating with her?
Yeah, like every couple of weeks we'll have a little Zoom chat. And like,
kind of feel good.
She promised me that she won't tell anyone in the family that we're in contact. But yeah, it's really weird. Like our family is so separate. I mean, I say she's my cousin and people imagine what their relationship is like with their cousins, but mine was not like her. I saw her once when I was 4 years old. Then I didn't see her again until I was like 9 years old, like when we visited Australia and it was for like an afternoon tea or a picnic or something like that as two families coming together. Then she, when I was living in the UK again, she got a job in London. So she moved out to the UK and she lived with us in the family home when I was a teenager and my other sister had gone off to university. So I was like 17. And she told me that I just spent all of my time in the bedroom. I didn't come out. And she was like, that's a bit weird. She's told me recently that when she was living there with my family, my mother started opening up about all of the crazy shit the family was going through and my dad's alcoholism. And my cousin was like, whoa, no, this, fuck this. I'm getting out and I'm moving somewhere else. I can't live with you people. My mother wants to heal, I think. When I was a teenager, she would get out every self-help book she could from the local library. She volunteered at the reception desk of a counseling office in the local town. But she's never shown any signs that she has to take accountability for her own behavior. I'm sure she's the one who created the roles in the family, the golden child, the scapegoat child, the lost child and stuff like that. She was never there. She surprisingly disappeared when my father was abusing me. I want to talk about my father's violence, physical violence. I think he was only physically violent with me. I've heard my mother in arguments goading him to hit her. But I don't know if he ever has hit her. Or maybe he hit her in the past and then stopped. But my father was, he was kind of like, he would smack me as a kid quite a lot and use the threat of smacking me as a kid as a way to control me, to suppress my emotions. As I got older and bigger and became a bit of a fighter and started standing up for myself, that discipline turned into just physical violence. He would start fights. I understand this now. We would have fights, but now I understand that he would cause these fights. And I would run up to my room, slam my door, and start playing some really loud music. This one incident, he went to the fuse box and took out the fuse to the upstairs of the house so it would cut my music dead. I went downstairs. I stepped on a bed so that I could reach the fuse box and was putting the fuse back in. He grabbed me by the back of my trousers, slammed me on the ground, grabbed me by the hair, and was dragging me through the house, saying that he was throwing me out of the house. I happened to find a set of keys in my pocket, and so I took out the keys, and I put them up against his wrist, and I said, let the fuck go of me now, or I'll slit your wrists open. And he could see in my eyes that I was fucking serious. And he let go, and he never touched me physically again. I remember having some horrible, violent thoughts when I was a teenager. I remember my parents arguing in their bedroom once, and I was in their bedroom, I don't remember why, and I saw a paperweight on their desk, and I imagined myself picking up that paperweight and just smashing it across his head. And the only thing that stopped me is because I didn't want to go to prison, I didn't want to go to jail and spend my life in jail. I remember being a kid wishing that I was adopted and that I'd be able to find my own family. I remember being a teenager fantasizing about how I'd never have to see them again after I left home.
I used to fantasize about peeing in my parents' shampoo bottle.
I'm sorry, what? What, like as a revenge?
Yeah, I didn't think about throwing a paperweight. I thought about peeing in their shampoo.
But like, I'm not a violent person. Like, it terrified me that I had that thought because I'm such not a violent person.
Well, you wanted the pain to stop.
Exactly. This is what I've come to terms with as I've started healing. Is that I was always a good fucking kid. I am a nice, kind, gentle, peace-loving, intelligent, hardworking person, and I always fucking have been. Mm-hmm. But the narrative in my family that I was a problem. was that I was a nuisance, I caused all of the fights, that I was unintelligent, I was stupid, that I was failing school. I fucking wasn't. I was a fucking great kid. I started playing piano at 7 and I excelled in it. I started playing trombone as an 11-year-old by my own esteem and I was great at it. I started composing music on the piano when I was 11. I started composing electronic music when I was 15. When I moved to the UK, I had to take a test to see what standard of like high school I'd get into, middle school. I got into the best school, not just in the catchment area that we were living in, but it was also like in the top 10 state schools of the fucking country at the time. Like, people moved their kids into that area just so that they could get into that school. I passed all of my fucking exams. I was not like a straight A student, but I was a good student. I had loads of extracurricular activities. I played in all of the school orchestras and bands. I played in the local youth center school orchestras and bands. I performed my own piano compositions at school concerts, which my parents didn't bother coming to. I had to ask friends' mothers for a lift home and stuff like that. And they'd look at me with like such a look of pity. And I'd feel so much shame that my parents hadn't come to see me perform my music in front of an audience of hundreds of people. They just took no fucking interest in my life. From quite a young age, they never checked that I'd showered. They never checked that I'd brushed my teeth. They never checked that I wore clean clothes. Like, I would receive comments from older kids at school that I stank. I never did my homework and they never checked. They never asked if I had homework. They never asked about school. Not a single fucking time. I think when I was a teenager, my parents were in couples counseling. And I think my mother had convinced my father to come to one parent teacher's night. It was the only parent teacher's night they ever came to. And my dad asked a question to my physics teacher. And I, because I was a little fucking mouthy little shit who was not afraid to fight back, I turned to my dad and said, so now is the time you take an interest in my education, is it? And the look of embarrassment on his face, my mother's face, and my teacher's face, and it just got brushed under the carpet. Like, there was no follow-up from the school.
Not one single
fucking person at school, not one fucking teacher or authority asked me at school, why do you never do your homework? Is there a reason why you're not achieving as school as you should be? Yeah.
Probably very much in the culture too, you know, there.
Yeah. That's
Especially the thing.
You don't talk about things. You shove it under the carpet. You don't ask questions. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's a lot more emotionally stunted, like in the, well, I don't want to say stunted, emotionally numb in the UK compared to in the US.
It is. It definitely is. I mean, that's why I'm part of this community, which is mostly North American.
Yeah, well, that's the next question I wanted to ask you is like what it's been like being, because this is the first time you've been like in a recovery community, right?
Yeah.
Community. And what has that experience been like? Terrifying?
It would have been at other times in my life, but I'm in a completely different headspace now. And I'm fully embracing it. And it's been the best thing that I've ever fucking done. I always thought therapy was one-to-one with a kind of very reserved person who didn't give away anything about their own life or their own struggles or something like that. And I found that really difficult. And I wish I could have just shaken my therapist and said, fucking tell me something about your life.
Exactly. I can't have a therapist unless they're... That actually, when I was interviewing IFS therapists, that was one thing that I was asking them is like, I need to know that you're willing to like share about yourself.
Yeah. I wish I'd asked that question about therapists when I was younger. Now, community, the idea of community to me is something that was quite scary as a young person because I never had any community. I didn't have a family community. I didn't have a religious community. I didn't have a national community. I didn't have a neighborhood network at all like that because we kept moving around. And I pushed back against any sort of belonging during my adolescent and young adult years. Like, I came out as gay when I was 15, 16, 17 years old. I flirted with the gay scene a little bit when I was young. And I was like, this is fucking not me. I don't want any part of this fucking community. And so I've always kind of lived a life separate from the gay community, but being an openly gay man, which is like a weird thing to be. I saw community as something that other people did. So like, lived in an atheist country, a Christian country, a British country, Muslim country, and religion was always other people's things, like ceremony and tradition and stuff like that was something that other people did. I didn't have any of that for myself. Like, there was no ceremony or tradition or culture in my family at all. So it's taken me a long time to get adjusted to the idea of belonging to a community. And I'm getting a lot better at it. I think I'm pretty good at it now.
I think you're doing a pretty good job.
I'm talking a lot. Like in this interview, for example, you haven't had to ask me too many questions. It's so opposite of what my experience was like as a kid. Being the youngest and the scapegoat, I was never allowed to talk in my family. If I opened my mouth, I was ridiculed and abused. And so I just kind of shut the fuck up. When I moved to the UK, and I would try to talk about my life before moving to the UK to other kids, they would think that I was like showing off and bragging about it. And so I was kind of shamed into silence. So for my teenage years, I just didn't speak about my life before I was 12 years old. I just pretended that I had always been a British kid. It wasn't until like my late 20s when I actually started speaking openly again about the fact that I'd lived abroad as a kid and kind of reclaimed that part of myself. Opening up generally has been such a lifesaver for me, and it's kind of coming in stages. So opening up about the fact that I used to not always live in the UK was kind of the first stage of opening up. I started opening up about my healing journey in my 30s to friends on Facebook and stuff like that. British people are not very good at kind of accepting that. There's a lot of, oh my God, if you're feeling down, you know, don't suffer alone. Give me a call. But you would never fucking call those people. You would never fucking call those people because there would be no support whatsoever. After my therapy finished last year, I joined a British online support group for like childhood abuse survivors. And I really didn't get on with it. It felt like...
Was it depressing?
Yeah. It was a lot of people looking for validation. A lot of people with a lot of sob stories, but not showing any signs that they wanted to advance in their healing. And that's why I fucking was so happy when I found the shit show, because people here are fucking trying to do the fucking work. Just fucking amazing. I'm not like just bigging you up for the sake of
being on the podcast. I know, it's really great. I agree. It's a really special
amazing
place.
Community. I don't know how you've attracted these people.
Because I'm a weirdo.
I felt at home so fucking quickly. I had
really great people
in groups at all. Like really, really great people. You're probably going to ask me how I found you, because you always ask that question in these shit show Saturdays. After I quit one-to-one psychotherapy last year because I just couldn't afford it anymore. It was too expensive. But I was like, this is not the end of my journey. So I started looking for resources online. I knew that I had CPTSD, but I didn't know anything about ACA. I found Patrick Tian, and I really enjoyed his content. Through him, I think I found Nate Postlethwaite, and I really liked that he shared his own story, but he doesn't have his own podcast. So I was looking for any podcast that had Nate speaking on it. And that's how I found your podcast. And then I joined the group. I think I'm only started feeling my body in like the last 9 months. Before it was completely disconnected. It came out as eczema. And I've suffered from eczema all of my adult life, like all over my fucking body at times, like hellishly, like waking up in the middle of the night, sheets covered in blood, kind of eczema. That was my body trying to cope with what my nervous system was going through, because I didn't know how to connect my brain to my body and start healing in a kind of somatic way. And in a kind of like, I didn't know that my trauma was held into my body, in my body for such a fucking long time. And just having that realization has really helped me. And like, I look after my body in such great ways these days. Like I cook from scratch, like almost every night with fresh ingredients. I exercise a shitload. I get out into the sun whenever the sun's out. I do yoga. I do somatic exercises. I do breathing exercises. Like I do so much to look after my body now. And I listen to my body. I used to not listen to my body when I was having anxiety attacks. I was just trying to like, you know, scroll on my phone or smoke weed or do whatever I could to get rid of the feelings. But now that I'm listening to it, it's really changing. my eczema in the last 3 or 4 months is almost non-existent. Like, it's amazing. I don't need to go to the doctor for all those creams and potions and drugs that I used to take. I had asthma as well, and that's almost completely gone. Like, that was just my body reacting to all of the trauma that was held in my body for decades. And not just understanding now that that trauma was held in my body is helping to release it.
I think a lot of sickness and illnesses is, you know, for a lot of people.
Yeah. I think. Yeah, completely.
And even when you think about, like, you know, cancer from smoking and stuff, it's just like, well, why do people smoke? You know what I mean? It's like, how many of illnesses are caused because of coping mechanisms?
Yeah. During this healing journey, you start to realize how many people around you are just living in dysfunction, like lower level dysfunction than perhaps we've had to deal with, a level of dysfunction that they can kind of manage with their coping mechanisms. They haven't been thrust to the point where it's like life or death situation. I need to heal. I'm going to die.
Exactly. The pain hasn't gotten great enough.
And I kind of recognize it now. Like my ex-husband, I met him when I was 23 and we separated when I was 37. And who I thought he was at the beginning of our relationship versus who I recognized who he is at the end of our relationship is polar fucking opposites. He was a mental health nurse. He was so stoic seeming. He never expressed emotions. We didn't have an argument for 5 years. And I thought, wow, this is great. We must have such a great connection. By the end of the relationship, I realized that he was avoidant. He was suppressing all of his emotions. He came from a family with a probably narcissistic mother, and he was scapegoating me. And he kept me around, and he was probably a mental health nurse so that he could surround himself with people who were, quote unquote, more sick than he was. So that by comparison, he didn't look so bad and he didn't have to do any work on himself. I think what caused so much stress in our relationship was the moment that I started healing myself, that I started seeking out therapy, working on myself. And I stupidly tried to have conversations with him about it. And he would shut me down. He would like mock me and like ridicule me because of it. And I was like, you're a fucking mental health nurse. How the fuck are you mocking your own fucking husband for trying to fix his shit? Jesus Christ. Yeah. I recognize him as just like this wounded 8-year-old child.
Well, you're attracted to him. What'd you expect?
Yeah, exactly. I know that it was my own dysfunction which attracted him into my life.
Well, and vice versa, right?
Exactly, yeah.
But it's also, too, it's like, that's how we heal, right? It's like, I try to view it that way, as like, all of these are opportunities for, like, our shit to be exposed. Like, we need help!
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, give me 3 things that you like about yourself.
I love that I'm able to connect with people no matter who they are, no matter where they're from in the world, no matter what their circumstances, no matter how different lives we've lived, I'm able to connect with them on a very human level and see past all the kind of cultural ephemeral differences. I love that about myself. I love that I'm creative. My creativity, especially through music, saved me when I was an adolescent and a young adult. That ability to have a resource to express all of the emotions that were inside of me that I was suppressing in other ways, it was like a conduit for all of that. And I'm so proud of myself for having that. 3, I'm kind. My affirmation that I've learned to tell myself just this year, first thing when I wake up, I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy. I don't wish harm on anyone. And I've always been a good boy, despite the message that my family tried to tell me. I've always been a good boy. And I'm proud of myself for that.
Well, I'm proud at how much you've grown in such a short period of time.
Thank you. A lot of it's down to you. I'm not fucking kidding. A lot of it's down to you.
Provide the vehicle.
Yeah, I know. It's the fucking healing bus of, like, the gods. It's like amazing. I should say ship, shouldn't I? It's the amazing ship, the healing ship. And you just had the best marketing strategy, obviously, because you invite the best people onto the ship. It's so
well,
good.
It did target. It's targeted, right? Thank you. It's been such a pleasure having you.
What
am
I
hope
and
so
dreams
honored.
For the future?
Yes. What is your hope and dream? Sorry, I forgot.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
I need to get my fucking life in order and create some financial stability for myself because I've never had it. I've always sought savior partners who are like more professionally settled than I am, but I need to fucking have that for myself. I need to build my self-esteem to the point where my confidence in my abilities and my self-esteem are kind of matched, because at the moment they're just completely skew-iff. So yeah, to find some kind of financial stability for myself, because that will help build my self-esteem as well.
Let's do it together, man.
Let's do it together.
me too. I need that. This has been great. I loved it.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.